with this? Greg Alcoholic. Sobriety date's October 27, 2008. This is my home group. And I'm grateful to be here tonight. And it was a good year. It was a good year. I kept a girlfriend the whole year. Like, the whole year. Yeah, so I'm pretty happy with this year. It was successful. No, but seriously, I love you guys. I love this home group. I love the fellowship that I really feel a part of, especially this year, and it just keeps getting better. And speaking for me tonight is I got Mickey. I've never heard him share a story before, but I always hear him in meetings, and he's got some knowledge. So I'm looking forward to some knowledge bombs from Mickey tonight. So thank you.
So I know, what do I have, like 15 minutes? Is that what it is? 25. 30-ish. I like the way you guys do math. I like that. You got signs. Perfect. Because I have to get sober, so I want to make sure that I get sober. My name's Mickey. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is August 31st, 1994. Bernie, congratulations. Got sober the same year. And I am just totally blown away by that. I was once a young person in AA, you know, and I thought I was the only one, you know. A couple things. Next week, since we're talking about meetings and stuff, there's going to be a fantastic speaker here next week. Bonnie over there is going to be sharing next week, so make sure you all come back. Yeah, Bonnie! Woo! And if you want to leave now, I hear there's a big thing going on at Palmacia tonight, so, you know, it's okay too. So, all right, here we go. I was born to an Irish Catholic family. I am the oldest of six. I have a loving family. My parents are still together. Great parents. Loved us all. Gave us everything that they could. I was popular in school. I did good in sports. I was smart on the outside. Every reason why I should just feel good about me. You know, there was nothing that, like, looking back, I should have felt good. For whatever reason, I felt like a loser. You know, I felt out of place. I felt unloved. I felt like I was just wrong. You know, if my mother told my brother she loved him, I thought that meant she didn't love me. You know, if I got a 99 on a test, I thought I was retarded. You know, you know, we were playing sports, and I wasn't picked the captain right away. I was like, I can't even try out for the team. You know, it's just I had this thing that just didn't make any sense. I always felt off. I was pretty good in baseball, and so I played with these older kids. And I didn't want to play with the older kids. You know, I wanted to play with my friends, and I'm pretty sure the older kids didn't want me to play with them either. You know, it was on this team. It was a travel team, and me playing with them meant that one of their friends wasn't playing. We're good? Good. So, you know, I'm on this team. I feel uncomfortable. I don't feel like I belong. You know, all this stuff is going on. And I don't belong. I really don't belong there. But we win this big game. And they have this party afterwards. And it was the first time I got invited to the party. I know they had parties after the other games. I just never got invited. And this time I get invited to the party. And I am like 11, 12 years old. And these kids are like 16 and 17. And I asked my dad if I can go, and he says yes. So I'm super excited to go to this party. I go to the party, it's at somebody's house, and turns out there's girls there. Okay. Now these are 16 and 17-year-old girls. I'd never seen them up close like this before. So I was pretty excited. But they didn't seem to want me there either, you know, and they're kind of looking at me like, what's this little kid doing here? And then they gave me a drink, a beer. And, you know, my parents didn't really drink. You know, my dad was a Vietnam Marine, and I think he might have forgot that he got out of the Marine Corps when I was born. So, like, when I was growing up, it was like everything was, you know, straight-laced. You know, it's like you just, everything was like bounce a quarter off the bed, white glove inspection. You know, we went to church, we got inspected before we went. You know, it was all this kind of stuff. And so I'm going to this thing, and I'm like, when he drank, he was cool. You know, so I knew drinking made you cool. Drinking was good. So I drank, and I had, you know, one drink, and it was like, all right, you know, and then I had another drink. And I'm guessing it's on that second drink. I can't imagine that I drank that much. But I remember this thing that happened. As I'm chugging this beer, I felt this warmth inside, this warmth that came in my belly and then started to move up my chest. And then it's, we call it the Irish tan in New York, where it started to go up, creep up my neck. My cheeks got all red, and I just felt so good. And then I stopped and I looked around, and everything changed. Those girls were checking me out. You know, they wanted me. You know, the guys wanted me there. I was funny. I was cool. I was a part of. It was fantastic. And I got hammered that night, and they brought me home, and they left me in front of, like, the door. I think I had my pants around my ankles, and nothing happened. But, you know, my pants were still around my ankles. And ring the doorbell. They opened the door. I fell in. You know, it was cute. You know, my parents thought it was cute and all that. Little did they know that I was like, I am going to make that happen as often as I can. You know, because that was incredible. And so I started to practice, you know, because I wanted to be good at it. And I started to, every chance I got, I drank. And I mean every chance I got. If it was like after school and I got home and my parents weren't home, I went and I got a beer, I went to the bathroom and I chugged it. Because, you know, they did chugging contests at these parties. You know, I would do shotguns by myself in the shower. You know, I was coming home at lunchtime mixing drinks to so I could be like a bartender. And I'm, you know, I'm in 6th, 7th, 8th grade, and I am obsessed with it. Because it made me feel so good. And I chased it as much as I could and as often as I could. High school, you know, that oranges thing, the shooting, that was brilliant. I mean, I wish I would have thought of that. My thing was I had a flask. I went to a all-boys school. We had to wear a jacket and tie. And so I had a flask, and I hooked it up with a little plastic piping, and I would sit in class and just sip on drinks. And I thought I was a genius. And I didn't really get in much trouble here and there. I still did good. And then it all went downhill. And I started forgetting to come home at night. And I lived on Long Island, so my parents, you know, my dad worked, and so he would go to bed. And as soon as the opportunity, I would leave the house on a Tuesday and get on the train and go into the city and hang out, you know, for a day or two. And my parents just couldn't handle this. So they said, you know, a number of times, if you continue to do this, we're going to have to ask you to leave the house. And I kind of thought they were bluffing, but, you know, turns out they weren't. So one of these times he says it, and I come home late, and I'm drunk, and he says, you know, you're not welcome here anymore. And I thought, all right, cool. You know, I'm going to go live in the city, and I'm going to make it. You know, I'm going to be, you know, a rock star. I'm just going to live a super awesome life, and then you'll see, and you'll be jealous. So I went to the city, and I probably had like $20, and I spent that $20, and then I fell asleep where people who are in the city and don't have any place to sleep fall asleep, like in an alley or in a courtyard or something. And so I woke up, and there was a couple of us sleeping in the courtyard, and some guy came by and woke us up with the broom, and we went and did what we do out there, which is ask other people for money. And I was, you know, 17 at the time, and I was a, you know, blonde hair, blue eye kid wearing a, you know, a polo shirt and probably like Docksiders or something. So I, you know, I go out in front of Penn Station. People are getting off the subway, the trains, and they're going to work. And I had this great story. You know, I got mugged last night. My parents are at home. They're so worried about me. What am I going to do? I made so much cash. I mean, I was rocking it. And I was just, this is going to be fantastic. And I was thought, you know, I'd go get a place, but I blew it all that day. I was like the hero with all the other guys who sleep in the courtyard. And so I go back the next day because that really worked out well. And turns out, when you think about it, it makes sense, but the same people get off the train and go to work every day. Yeah. So one of those people happened to say something to me, and he was not too happy with me, and he let me know that. And so I was like, all right, I'll go to a different corner. So I didn't last long out there. I mean, God bless the people that do. My problem was I was good being drunk and living on the street and stuff. I would always end up sober at some point. And when I was sober, I felt bad, like really bad, you know, like I wanted to die bad. And one day my dad comes, just drives up, you know, I'm walking in the city, and he pulls up next to me, and I realize he's come to his senses, and he needs me to come home. So he asks if I want to go for breakfast, to get in the car for breakfast, to go to, we pull up some diner, and he starts talking. You know how parents talk, and you're just like, it's like Charlie Brown, I have no idea what he's saying. I'm just waiting for those magic words, son, please come home, I miss you. And something happened, and I said yes, and then I went home. And I thought it was, everything was going to be cool, and I get and I take a shower, and that was the best shower. And I get in bed, and I'm all ready to go to sleep, and some guys come into my house, into my room. They pull me out of the bed. They throw me back in the shower. Then they throw clothes at me, and they put me in their car. And they say, we're going to a meeting. I was like, what do you mean? Like, what is that? And my dad said, you agreed that you would go to AA. And I was like, oh my God, what? Okay, you know? And I get in the car, and it's at Belmont Racetrack. We pull up to this house, and, you know, we walk in, and we walk up these steps, and it's like this little room, and there's a desk, and like one of my baseball coaches is there, some of my dad's friends are there, and the guy behind the desk is in a white lab coat. And I'm thinking, one flew over the cuckoo's nest, they're sending me away, this is going to be really, really bad, and I'm shaking, and I can't imagine what's going on. And it was an AA, I know now it was an AA meeting, but I didn't hear anything that they said. The only thing, like some guy gave me coffee, I spilled it all over him. I knew that across the street that there was a liquor store. So I just had to figure out a way that when I can leave. And they took a break for smokes, you know, halfway through the meeting, and I took off. And I just took off, and I went, and I don't know, and I got drunk, and I ended up back home. And I made it, the deal I made with my parents was I would try and get sober. I would go back to school, I would go to AA meetings every day, and I would see a therapist. And I was like, I don't have to stop drinking. You don't have to stop drinking. This is what you have to do. So I was like, all right. So I went, started going to AA every day, went back to school. Through, you know, God and my parents' checkbook, I graduated high school, I'm going to AA, and I'm drinking, like, pretty much every day. And then the people in AA asked if I would not drink before the meetings. They said that, you know, it would be nice for them if I wasn't drunk during the meeting. And I said, you people are cool, I could do that, you know. So I started to go in earlier meetings, like, because 7 o'clock was too long to wait. So I started going to noon meetings. But something happened in the course of those meetings where you guys would say these things, and I kind of related, and I thought, you know, I'm not an alcoholic because I never had a DUI. You know, I got kicked out of driver's ed for drinking and driving. So, you know, that wasn't going to happen. I'd never been divorced. You know, I was 17 years old. I was sleeping on the streets. I don't think I was a catch. Like, no one was going to marry me. You know, and it was like these things. I was just like, how can I be an alcoholic? And but I said, you know, I can stop, like, for a day. And I would stop and not drink for a day. And then I'd reward myself by getting drunk. And then I'd, like, push it, not drink for 3 days. And I'd get drunk for, like, you know, see, you're great. And then one of these times I was not drinking. And it happened to be the 4th of July. And they used to talk about changing people, places, and things. And I was totally against that. You know, I was like, I'm 18 years old. I'm not changing my friends. I'm not hanging out with you alcoholics. I'm not doing it. So I'm hanging out with my friends. It's 4th of July. We're going to the beach. We got kegs and all this. I'm not drinking, you know, but they're going to party and I'm going to be with them. And they went to get their drinks. They said, you want anything? I said, no. And then I said, you know what? Beer. If I just have some beer, I'll be okay. Well, it turns out beer gets you drunk. And it does. So I'm drunk, and when I get drunk, I like to do all kinds of stuff. So I wanted to do these other things, and I end up in this place in it's East Jamaica, Queens, and I don't belong there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay, and it's like 2 o'clock in the morning, 4th of July, and I happened upon some people who had something that I wanted, and they had some things to say to me, you know, and it was, you know, kind of just about the color of my skin and that kind of stuff, how I don't belong, and so I said some things back to them. I thought we were like kind of competing with what we could say, and so they had guns, and I didn't, and so, but I really want the stuff, so like the more, I'm still walking up to them, and then they started to beat me, and I kind of sobered up real like quick. I was like, don't fall down, like, you know, that don't go down, and I started running, and they started shooting, and I started praying, and I'm running, I'm turning the corner, and there I hear laughing and guns and all that. And I turn the corner, and I just, my next thought is, I know where I could go. And I took that money, and I got in the subway, and I went to the city. And my jaw was broken in like 5 places. My eye socket was fractured. My nose was broken. My head was split open. I end up in the hospital after I stayed out as long as I could, but I don't know when. I ended up in the hospital, and I'm coming to in the hospital, and I don't know if you've ever come to in the hospital with, like, your jaw wired shut and, like, a patch on your eye and something on your nose and stuff. You kind of think, how did I get here? And so I'm thinking that, and I'm thinking all this stuff. And for the first time in my life, I thought I might have a problem. You know, it was that thing where it was like, I thought, I'd always said, God, please help me. Please get me out of this. Please don't let that happen. And then I would always say, thank you. You know I didn't really mean that, right? You know that was like, you know, I can't do that. And this time, I didn't even take the time to say thank you. I mean, it wasn't even a thought. And then I thought about all the stuff you people in AA said, and I said, you know, my parents had been offering me to go to treatment, so I went to treatment. And I went to a very nice treatment center, and it was great. My jaw was wired shut, so I didn't really have to participate. I just kind of sat, hung out, and it was cool. And I got back from that treatment, and I had 30 days. I'd never had 30 days since I was like 13 years old. And I wanted to go to AA and get a sponsor, you know. So I went, and they said, you know, pick someone who has what you want. And there was a guy with like 35 days, and he was like only 5 years older than me. So he had what I wanted. So I was like, will you be my sponsor? And he didn't have a sponsor, and so I knew you had to give it away to keep it. So I became his sponsor, and we knew you had to do the steps. So we got the book together and we read and everything. And those were the most miserable 60 days of my life. You know, there's nothing worse than like being in AA and not having a program. I mean, it was absolute misery. I just wanted to die. And we're good? That's okay. So I wanted to die. So in my 90 days, they give them 90-day medallions, and we flipped my 90-day medallion to see who would drink first. And we were at Fort Totten, and we were looking at like the city, and it was beautiful. And we got hammered, and then we decided we were going to move to Florida. And I think we might have made it over the bridge, but I'm not too sure. And next thing, I come to again. It's probably like a week later, and I'm in that treatment center. And this place was gorgeous. Now I have to participate. I have to talk. I have to say all these things that are going on. And I can't handle it. I can't handle being sober. Like, if you knew how badly I felt, you would not ask me to do such a crazy thing as to not drink. I mean, drinking is the thing that cures all that. You know, it can't be the other stuff, because I'm smart. You know, I do good. I have friends. I have all this stuff. So what is it going to be? I feel so bad. But when I drink, I'm hanging out on the street with bums, not showering for days, and I feel like a king. You know, so how could you take that away from me? But then it's like it came to, I realized that I'm destroying me. I'm destroying my family. And then this thing happened where I would not get drunk. Or I would not, that feeling wouldn't come. I would drink and drink and drink, and I wouldn't go away. Or I'd always end up sober. So I was like, I'll give it a shot. I'll try. And I, you know, became willing to do other things. And they suggested I go to a long-term treatment center. So I came down here to Tampa for Turning Point. And at the time, I thought I was coming for like a month, and then like 6 months later, and then 6.5 months. So 6.5 months later, I get out of Turning Point. And Turning Point was great because it took me to AA. And I came to AA on a regular basis, and I built a network of people, and I learned that you guys all had the same feelings that I had, and you had the same solution before, and it didn't work for you either. And then the solution became the steps, and AA, and God. And I don't know how that works. I mean, I'm sober 20 years, and I don't know how that works, but I know it works. I know now that I have this connection with this higher power that makes me feel better than drinking did. That makes everything okay. That makes me look out to a crowd of people and think, I belong. That I'm a part of. That you want me here. And it's like, and those are the things that I didn't have with my own family who loved me. And I would look out at my family and think, you don't want me here. They did, but I would feel just wrong. And so it's like I started to do, you know, I didn't do everything, you know, that AA suggested because I thought you guys were a little demanding. So I only did as much as I thought I had to, and I got drunk again. And I got drunk, and it got bad, and I ended up back in New York, living in my parents' basement, desperate to be, you know, sober. For the first time, just absolutely pure desperation to be sober. And I got a sponsor. One of the guys that picked me up took me to my first meeting, and I said, please tell me what to do. And he did. And I had a commitment at a meeting every single night, and we did the steps every Wednesday. And then he took me to detox meetings, and we did all this stuff, and things started to change. And I wanted to drink in the beginning every day. And slowly, I started to feel better about me and about myself and about my future. And then it's like I went through all the steps, and I started to feel really good. And then he said, you know, you've been through all the steps. You can start making some of your own decisions. And I didn't know what that meant. So I'm sitting at home in my basement. I had a job cleaning ashtrays at a hotel, and my brother was going to school, and my sisters were going to school, and I was cleaning ashtrays at a hotel, and I was cleaning ashtrays at like three meetings, and I was like assistant coffee maker at two meetings. I wanted to be coffee maker, but they wouldn't let me. I was assistant. And I see this commercial, Be All You Can Be, and We'll Pay for School, and I get in my car, and I drove down to the recruiter's office, and I signed up, you know, and it was just reserves. They hadn't gone anywhere since Vietnam, and I'm super excited, and I'm going to pay for school, and I go to my meeting that night, and I'm super proud, and I go to my sponsor, I'm like, hey, guess what I did? And I tell him, he's like, what is wrong with you? He's like, didn't you learn anything about, like, talking about before you make any decisions? I was like, you said I can make some of my own decisions. He's like, I thought, you know, if you wanted to mix up a meeting or something, this is a big decision. So I go to boot camp, because once you sign, I mean, you're in. And I go to this other school, and I was sober, and I wasn't going to meetings, so I was angry, so that worked well in the military, and so I did good. And I go to my first drill, and I'm back in Tampa, because I want to be in Tampa. I love Tampa AA. And so I'm in Tampa, and I go to my first weekend drill, and they say, guess what, we're going to Haiti. And I was like, no way, that's a joke. We don't go anywhere. We're the reserves. Like, no, we're going. So we went to Haiti, and I'm scared. I'm so scared that I'm going to drink, because we're going on this UN mission, and it's not really dangerous or anything, but it's dangerous for me, because I'm not going to be, you know, in AA. And I don't know what I'm going to do, and people are drinking down there. And we go to this thing, and we're in these tents, and there's like 10 guys in the tents, and we have drink tickets, and they're getting booze sent from home, and I don't know what to do. And someone made a suggestion, I go to the chaplain's tent and put a sign on the chaplain's tent, Friends of Bill W. So I do that, and I go to chaplain's tent on like Tuesdays at 6, and I wait, and nobody comes. And I'm like, oh my God, what's going to happen? And so the next, I put a sign Thursdays at 6, and I go, and nobody comes. And I'm praying, and I don't know what to do, and it was like, you know, a while ago, and we didn't have cell phones, and I go to a chaplain's tent, and this thing pops into my head, not me thinking, somehow, you know, God got into my thick head, and he says, just have a meeting. So I did. I'm in the chaplain's tent, I'm all by myself, I open it up, I read the preamble, I read how it works. I didn't read all the traditions like you did, but, you know,
I asked if anyone had a topic. I had a topic. And I shared out loud. And then I knew once I said it, what some of the other people in the meetings would say. So the first time I got up and I moved seats. And I shared some other experience, strength, and hope. And you know what? It was great. It was good. And I did things during that 6 months that I would never thought. I used to talk to the guys. I used to share my story in the meetings. And the guys would be sitting there drinking, like, you know, whiskey out of Listerine bottles. And I'm telling my story. And they were like, oh, you're crazy. What are you thinking? Thank God you're sober. And, you know, and I'm doing these things. I'm praying like I've never prayed before. And I built this connection with this higher power where this God became my best friend. Not like, you know, this being that's out there. My best friend that was there, and I knew. There wasn't like a question anymore. It's like I knew that God was with me. And I knew everything was going to be okay. And it was. And I stayed sober, and I came back to Tampa, and I kind of struggled with getting back into meetings because I thought, you know, my meetings are pretty cool. But I ended up back in meetings, and I went back to school, and school, you know, when you're sober and you show up at class like every day, it's like, school's not that hard. I mean, it's like, you know, so I did, and I did well in school, and I decided I wanted to do some more school, so I ended up going to time goes by so fast. I go to the University of Florida, and I went to this school to be somebody that I wanted to be, or profession I wanted to do, and I'm in my last semester of that schooling, and I'm so excited because I've been eating ramen noodles and, you know, Subway sandwiches, the buy one get one free stuff, for a long time. And I'm like, finally, you know, things are gonna happen. And turns out, like, in the Army Reserves, you're like signed in for 6 and then you have 2 inactive. And then, like, a week before my contract was up, I got activated and I went over for the Operation Iraqi Freedom in March of 2003, and I was not scared. And I was okay. And I knew I was going to stay sober because I had God. And I knew that whatever I was doing there was supposed to happen. And it was going to be okay. And it was going to be better than okay. It was going to be a fantastic experience. And it was. And I actually went to a meeting out there, you know, with other people. And and I had meetings by myself. And I developed, you know, rebuilt that relationship with God. Because when I'm here and I'm outside and life is good, sometimes I allow those things that God has given me to get in the way of my relationship with Him. And sometimes He has to take those things away to let me get close with Him again. And hopefully I don't have to, you know, do anything that creates all those things going away. But I know that God is with me no matter what. No matter what, and everything will be okay if I don't drink and I keep showing up. It'll be okay. And now it's like I have a beautiful wife. I have 3 kids that I absolutely adore. I am a grandfather. I'm Grandpappy Mickey. And I absolutely love it. And I just have, and like, AA has given me this life beyond my wildest dreams. And for that, I thank you.